Ladies and gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining today's teleconference, ARS Focused All-Cap Portfolio Update. Please note that all lines will be muted until the question and answer portion of the call. We will provide you with instructions on how to ask questions at that time. Today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements. All statements made that are not historical facts are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. Please refer to ARS's most recent outlook on the ARS website for important legal and disclosure information. With that, I turn the call over to Andrew. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Nisi. We want to welcome you all to today's discussion. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us. I'm Andrew Schmeidler, and I'm joined by my colleagues Arnold Schmeidler and Ross Taylor. Today, we will be sharing with you in a Q&A format an update on our investment outlook and actions that we've taken in our all-cap growth strategy. We also want to open the line to questions from the audience later in the call. As background, the ARS-focused all-cap strategy is an equity strategy that seeks to identify the best-positioned and undervalued companies across market cap ranges and includes investments characterized as growth or value in their orientation. Our primary goal with the strategy is to build the purchasing power of portfolios over time. And we've been successful in doing so over multiple time periods, including since inception in 1993, where we've had a compounded rate of return of approximately 11.5% per year, gross of fees, outperforming the Russell 3000 by over 1.6% per year for the comparable period. Now turning to what is foremost on our minds and on the minds of our clients and investors is the emergence and the spread of the coronavirus. We're all observing an increase in market volatility and in uncertainties as the situation evolves. Given this and recent negative reaction in the financial markets, our focus today will be a discussion of our views and the impact that the virus has on both our outlook and on investments. We will also describe the measures that we've taken in our all-cap strategy over the past weeks. At the same time, it's really important that we point out to you, drawing from our investment experience, that we strongly believe that we are seeing a market that is creating attractive buying opportunities. To explain further, I want to turn to the first question. Arnold, on a conference call that we hosted a month ago, you spoke about our investment outlook. You had referenced the coronavirus situation, which at the time was centered in China. Since then, the virus has spread to numerous countries, including the U.S., and the financial markets are now reacting negatively to it. What, if anything, has changed in our thinking?
Thanks for the question, Andrew. Welcome, everybody. There are a number of things that have changed, and for us, many of them are actually interestingly positive. The first thing I want to say is just a short time ago, the Federal Reserve, you may not be aware of this, lowered interest rates 0.5 percentage point. And the 10-year Treasury, which when we spoke last and wrote our last outlook, was at about 1.5, 1.6% interest, and it is now close to 1%. In the past few days, we've seen the effect of the slowdown that created something of a market panic, which was partly computer-driven because of the algorithms and the computerization of trading. But nevertheless, the panic in the market, which all panics do, create the best opportunities for investors to take advantage of. However, most people can't do it. It's very interesting. Human behavior in the financial markets is 180 degrees away from what we all do when things are put on sale that we want to buy. In this case, in the markets, people run away from the markets. Instead of looking for the opportunities that make good sense, that can be taken advantage of. And with lower interest rates, and I want to come back to this at the end, the effect of lower interest rates, and dramatically lower because these are historically lower than they've ever been, a dollar of earnings is worth more now than it was a few weeks ago. Let me repeat that. A dollar of earnings is more valuable today than it has been. Now, what's changed is that the panic in the market has ironically created these opportunities that most people don't take advantage of. On the other side, the business expansion that we've been undergoing for the past 10 years has been extended. And as a consequence of lower interest rates, we can now confidently feel that rates are likely to stay lower for longer. It is very difficult to imagine how the central banks, and this isn't only the Federal Reserve, but overseas, the European central banks, are in a position where they'd ever be able to easily raise interest rates. What's changed is that the slowdown has also reduced energy prices, which is beneficial for consumers, but is not beneficial for producers. And some of the most important producers happen to be bad actors. This is not good for them. But because it's good for consumers and good for all companies that have a significant energy cost, this tends to increase their earning power and their spending power. In addition, because of the virus, there has been activity and discussion in changing supply chains away from China. This will be beneficial for the United States to be less dependent, and we know from trade negotiations and all the elements that went into those trade negotiations that China has been a very difficult place for us, for the rest of the world, from a technological point of view. So any supply chains moving away from China is not good for China, but it is good for us. Another element that's changed is that government and corporate spending has just become less expensive, which means that any programs that this country undertakes that involve borrowed money will cost less than it has ever cost the United States. By the same token, some of the big beneficiaries of these lower rates are dividend payers, which we referenced in our last outlook and our last call. Dividend payers that raise dividends. We referenced last time we spoke the utility industry, which has guaranteed mandated rates of return on invested capital of anything from very high single digits to low double digits. And the utilities over the next 3 years are spending tens of billions of dollars on increasing their capacity for transmission and distribution of electric power in their necessity to move to alternative energy sources because of the climate change issue. Another element that's very important to bear in mind is that this reinforces our view of the secular trends, the secular themes that we talked about, technology, healthcare, defense, and we have to be careful to make sure all of us understand that in the defense sector, not only do we have to repair, rebuild, modernize a lot in the defense area, but we don't have to depend on a consumer with elastic demand. The consumer here is the U.S. government. No question about paying bills, no question about the value of the contracts that have to be put out. For example, we are replacing an element of our submarine fleet, which is a total cost of over $100 billion for relatively few, very few producers. Another interesting thing to note is that consumer debt becomes less costly to borrow, and less costly to manage. Furthermore, in the pharmaceutical sector, we think the narrative can change as pharmaceuticals using their bioscience capability 24/7 to come out with a vaccine, which will be later on, but to come out with treatments sooner than later. This will be beneficial for everybody, but also it will change, we think, to some degree, the narrative, the negative narrative about pharmaceutical companies. The last thing I would mention is that companies that have an embedded advantage in the competitive landscape, great example, we've talked about this before, is the semiconductor capital equipment area. Today, we all depend on technology, and we're going to be depending on more of it with much more sophistication over the next 2, 3, 4 years and beyond. The cost of a manufacturing facility, a full-blown manufacturing facility, can be $15 billion. This means the embedded advantage for those companies that have manufacturing cannot be replicated, cannot be put up by other companies that maybe want to get into the industry. And the rates of return on these investments are very significant. Yesterday we had a conversation, just as an aside, with one of the most important companies in the world in this industry that just borrowed recently $750 million to expand its business, and their interest cost was 0.25%. These kinds of companies represent great opportunities, and when the markets pull back the way they have been and could continue for some time, these are the areas that really we want to continue to focus on, to be very sensitive to. And these conditions will be with us for some months probably, but then we will expect to see a second half acceleration of economic activity.
Thank you. Ross, as the coronavirus has unfolded, can you discuss what actions that we've taken in our all-cap growth strategy?
Well, first, it's important to remember that our fundamental investment discipline in this strategy focuses us on high-quality growth companies with strong balance sheets and free cash flow. So that in and of itself provides a level of long-term defense. From a more tactical perspective, late last year, in response to the very strong performance of a number of our names during the fourth quarter, we began to trim positions which, although we liked them long term, we felt had gotten a bit ahead of themselves on a short-term valuation basis. We continued this process in January on a name-specific basis, and one target example here was Advanced Micro Devices, which had been a very powerful stock for us in 2019, up over 100%. But we felt that as the price approached and even exceeded the $50 level, it was no longer offering us an attractive risk-reward opportunity. So in late January, we actually eliminated the last of the Advanced Micro Devices. Also in late January, when it became more evident that coronavirus was going to have a meaningful drag on the level of economic activity in China, we reviewed our all-cap portfolios looking for companies where we felt the risk of near-term business disruption from the virus was significant. We saw that risk either coming from the fact that the supply chain for the business ran through China, and that was companies such as Apple, Micron, OLED, and NVIDIA, or because China itself was an important end market for their products or services, such as Disney and Apple, or because we felt that the effect of China slowing on the global economy was going to lead to lower economic growth overall in the world, and that would act as a real or an imagined drag on companies such as Citicorp, which is considered the most international of the U.S. money center banks. And although we've put some of the cash we raised back to work, we've generally been slower to put it back to work than we might otherwise have been because of the uncertainty surrounding the situation.
Thank you. Ross, just following that, given the pullback in the markets, what are other areas that you're seeing where opportunities to invest are unfolding?
Yeah, well, first, and as Arnold mentioned, it's important that to remember that in periods like what we went through, particularly last week, market selling becomes completely indiscriminate. If you're not seen as a clear winner or at least a rumored winner from whatever is causing the uncertainty in the market, you're likely going to become a significant loser. And in the short run, this does create pain for our investors. And as the damage in some of our stocks has been not insignificant in the last week or so. In fact, the damage, it's important to remember, as fundamental investors, we see outstripping meaningfully the fundamental impact these companies are going to suffer from this disease and any impact it might have on global economic activity. In the long run, though, this has created tremendous opportunity, And as I mentioned, we've already begun to slowly put money back into the market in select names where we feel the damage done to the valuation has far outstripped our current expectations for any potential fundamental damage the virus or the economic slowdown in its wake is going to have on the business. Specific names we've added include Coupa Software, PayPal, and a name you've probably heard from us before, Biohaven, which in spite of last week's FDA approval for their migraine treatment, which we believe meaningfully de-risks the story because now they have not only proven their science in front of the FDA, but they have a product that will soon be coming to market to generate revenues, earnings, and free cash flow. The stock is selling substantially lower today than it was a month ago when all of the uncertainty the FDA was still hanging over. We're also using this pullback as a chance to monitor a number of names that we've long coveted for the portfolio to see if they pull back enough to let us get involved in this current period of uncertainty. It's important, though, to reiterate that the coronavirus has not done any damage to the long-term secular themes that we outlined in our outlook. While some of the themes, such as a 5G rollout in China, have been pushed to the right a quarter or two, because of the sharp slowdown in Chinese economic activity. In fact, 2 weeks ago, Chinese year-over-year auto sales had fallen 99% in the week, which basically says people stopped buying cars in China, which shows you how slow their economy got for a period. But others of these outlooks faces have been strengthened, such as healthcare and the defense area, where Arnold mentioned that we expect to see a higher level of geopolitical uncertainty in regions such as Africa and the Middle East. And that increased instability, we believe, will result in increased spending in the space. And lastly, it's important to note that none of our investment themes or the theses we have on our specific holdings have been derailed by what's been going on in the last week or so.
Thank you. Arnold, how do we think that the economy and the investment landscape will evolve over the coming year?
Well, first of all, it's very clear to us, to all of us, that a first quarter slowdown is going to occur, is occurring. I would hasten to add that the United States economy is in a very strong position, and you may have all seen that in January we had a record number for construction spending for this year, $1.37 trillion, a lot of it in housing, some of it in government construction. So the U.S. economy is in good shape. The banking system in the U.S. has never or rarely ever been as strong as it is today. So the investment landscape is really being affected solely by what's happened with the virus. As a result, we have a slowdown at hand. It could extend part into the second quarter, if not more. But bear in mind that as production overseas has become negatively impacted and consumer demand yet hasn't fallen significantly, inventories are being drawn down. So when this passes and we start to get a pickup, there will be a very sharp, likely very sharp increase in production in order to satisfy the two needs. One is consumer demand, and the other is the rebuilding of inventories. So a second half pickup will result in a pretty, could result in a pretty sharp increase in corporate earnings. The other thing to note is that capital is moving and has moved away from the areas impacted by the virus. But where does it move to? It's been moving to the secular trend companies that benefit. It's been moving to dividend payers. And if you have a company that's paying a dividend, let's say it's yielding 3.5%, 4.5%, a few weeks ago that was okay. It was much better than the treasury market. But now it's as much as 3 or 4 percentage points over what you can get in the treasury market. So that's changed. Another change that has occurred is that the central banks all over have become more accommodative, and that's to cushion the decline in economic activity, which is temporary, but nevertheless, it's to cushion the decline in activity. It has the effect of pushing up financial asset prices. And the irony is that what we said earlier, that a dollar of earnings is now worth more than it was a few weeks ago, it's ironic that the increase in that earning power, the value of that earning power, comes at a time when share prices for some of those very companies have been declining, when actually they don't, these prices are not reflecting proper financial behavior, but they are reflecting human behavior of running away from uncertainty, which is typical in market declines. And the result always, with every decline you can look at, is you get a recovery, a rebound. And the most dramatic example in our lifetimes was in 08, 09, when the market virtually collapsed, only to come on over the next 10 years to make important new highs. So this is a period of time. It can last for weeks. It can last for a couple of months. But at some point, it will go away. And those of us who can take advantage of it are going to be generating higher rates of return than if we did nothing or actually sold in this type of environment, high-quality companies that benefit from the outlook. Now, I would also point out it should not be a surprise to any of us to see an increase in merger and acquisition activity, because as share prices have gone down, and this has happened in virtually every single cycle, companies now look at other companies to buy that have become bargains. They can buy them at premiums to the market, which are lower than what those market prices might have been sometime in the past, and can finance it at record low interest rates. So these are some of the changes in the investment landscape that we think can evolve over this year.
Ross, is there anything that you might like to add to Arnold's comments?
Well, I'd like to echo many of them. I think it's important to remember that from both a market and a company perspective, people need to focus on the long term, not the short term. The short term has a tremendous amount of uncertainty, and that uncertainty has bred fear. And while the coronavirus itself is somewhat unique as a disease, the situation that it's presenting in the market really isn't. We've had numerous periods in the last 10 to 12 years where we've had serious bouts of short-term market volatility from a variety of causes. People forget that the market collapsed heavily a number of years ago on fear that the EU was going to break up because of the Greek debt crisis. And then we had the unexplained collapse of December of 2018, which took the market down 20% in days for no real evident reason. Each time these happened, people said, market pundits said, the bull market was dead. In the end, all of these simply turned out to be a lot more flash than substance from an investor standpoint, and as Arnold said, gave the individuals who stepped into the uncertainty a tremendous reward for having done so. A year from now, knowing what we know, we're confident that whatever damage has been done by the coronavirus will be receding into our rearview mirror as the economy, both here and the U.S., will have begun to return to a growth trajectory. With one major lasting impact from all this being, as Arnold mentioned, the fact that in our opinions, interest rates will be lower for longer than they otherwise would have been. And this lower for longer with a return to economic growth will support valuation in the equity markets going forward. We also believe it will help prolong the economic and market cycles that have been in place since 2009, which we don't think is the current base case thinking for a lot of people involved in the market today. And lastly, as I mentioned, the coronavirus is itself unique and somewhat unique. And there have been a number of coronaviruses. Actually, the irony on this one is that there's a whole class of viruses called coronaviruses, and this one somehow picked that up as its tagline. But in the last 10, 12 years, we've had at least three I can remember scaring the devil out of the market. We had bird flu, we had SARS, and we had MERS. All of these diseases quickly ran their course. In fact, they ran their course so quickly that all the work being done by drug and testing companies to come up with effective treatments, vaccines, and tests that would identify the drug ended up not being able to be completed before the disease had run its course. Therefore, no one put anything in front of the FDA because simply there was no market for the products anymore. As a result, the current outbreak we're confronting with fewer tools than we would have had if one of these prior outbreaks had actually lasted longer, giving businesses and regulators a chance to actually prove out vaccines that might work and solutions that might actually help dampen or cure the disease, as well as rapid tests that would help put uncertainty to rest. So we're comfortable that if this disease does last longer, there will actually be a tremendous amount of good that will come from it, because these answers will finally be developed and these important products will be developed, and that will make the world a better place because of it.
Arnold, what do you believe is important that people are missing or not thinking about at this time?
I think the most important point to make is that unless you're a professional investor like we are, like Warren Buffett is, it's much easier for us to take advantage of market opportunity than it is for most investors. Most investors are inundated every single day with talking heads, predicting market outcomes, talking about what's going to do today, what's going to do tomorrow, why this happened, why that happened. The focus is all short term. And when it's that way, it's very easy to be subject to succumb to the temptations to do the wrong things at the wrong time. If you remember, every time we have these conversations or write the outlook, we are emphasizing the fact that the market is a medium of exchange. It is not a casino. We're not trying to catch points in the market. As a medium of exchange, if we can get more value for what we're buying for our dollars, we are setting ourselves up, setting our clients up for meaningful returns on capital over time. As soon as we get seduced by short-term market moves, we're going to make mistakes. And those mistakes are the result of not being proper investors, buying companies, instead trying to trade the market. And sometimes if you try to trade the market, it works out well. We have an expression in Wall Street that traders die broke. That's an old expression. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it. But the fact is that the only way to build capital is to compound rates of return. And the only way to compound rates of return is to be a long-term investor. So I would leave you with that very important point, because I think most people do not think about that factor when markets are under stress. And quite the contrary, if you turn over the coin, people do the opposite. When markets are rising, they feel good. They buy. They pay more than they should. But the market keeps going up, so they feel they've done the right thing, when actually they've got themselves worse prices than they otherwise could have had, and therefore do not compound rates of return as successfully as they would if they did the reverse. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Arnold. We'd like to now open the line to questions from our listeners. Nisi, can you please open it up for polling?
As we move to Q&A, please press #2 on your telephone keypad to enter the question queue. You will hear a notification when your line is unmuted. At that time, please state your name and question. Once again, pressing #2 will indicate that you wish to ask a question. And I do have a question on the line.
Okay. Guys, thanks for that.
Call, you may go ahead.
Hey, guys, it's Joe Azzaro. How are you? Thank you for the update. Very informative. I guess I'd just be curious, at what point, do you become a bit more concerned or start to become more cautious on your investment strategy related to the coronavirus? Because obviously it has some, different qualities to other things. Obviously, there's been, like you mentioned, Ross, a number of different viruses over the past 10 years that we've kind of seen come and go. But at what point does this make you a bit more nervous? I'd be curious to kind of hear at what point do you raise the alarm.
Okay, this is Ross, and I believe what we're doing is we're watching the data, the information. We're letting actual facts dictate to us what we do. We're seeing, Chinese cases slow. We're seeing actually some evidence of significantly lower death rates than were earlier projected as people get better reads on how many people have been infected. And you watch and listen to companies. We keep in touch. As Arnold mentioned, yesterday we were chatting with a company. You know, you talk to companies to try to get a better understanding of what's actually impacting their business. And so you try to react to facts, not emotions. And if the facts lead us to believe that things are getting worse and are, you know, driving down our valuation targets to levels where the market is not attractive and they don't offer attractive upside, we would then, I believe, you know, adjust what we're doing. But right now what we're seeing is a market, a pendulum that overswung in many cases, and we're seeing panic. I mean, we're hearing people, I mean, you're talking about people buying canned foods. I mean, the canned food companies were in a horrible place 3 months ago because no one wanted to buy canned food, and now suddenly people are telling you you need to stockpile canned food so you don't have to go to the grocery store. Facts will, you know, will drive us. Emotions, we'll try to keep in check.
Horace, I would also add to that. Joe, I would also add something very interesting, very important to bear in mind. The most elastic demand companies, whether it's airlines or any number of other companies that you and we can certainly point out and mention, where consumers are not booking travel, for example, we are not interested in trying to pick up bargains in that area at the present, but we're also very aware that capital which flows away from those companies wind up having declines in their share prices. The capital that flows away goes somewhere. Where does it go? It goes to the beneficiaries of the environment that we're living in. Some of those, and we mentioned this earlier, we cannot overemphasize the importance of capital flowing into dividend payers that represent a major portion of our ability, your ability, to compound rates of return. If you took the average rate of return on a common stock over time, which is something like 9 or 9.5%, and if you could get 40% of that or 50% of that rate of return in a dividend that can be compounded, that's how you compound capital. So we are looking at the areas that, which we mentioned earlier, the secular trends, where business keeps either being strong or getting better. Those businesses will attract capital. But the net effect is that the number of choices in the marketplace have been temporarily reduced. When all of this is behind us, then there will be more choice for investment. But once we have to eliminate inelastic consumer spending, and travel is a good example, at some point that will all come back. But it's not here, and it's not now. So that capital we see flowing to other areas which speak to the secular trends that we've identified over time.
Helpful. Thank you.
Nancy, are there additional questions? I'm sorry?
Not at this time.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Arnold, and thank you, Ross, for sharing our thinking. It's often reputed that Mark Twain said, history does not repeat itself, but it often rhymes. Well, we've not experienced this current coronavirus, and thus we continue to monitor it very closely, ready to make portfolio adjustments. What we have seen time and again is the transmission of fear into the financial markets and the buying opportunities that it then creates. While weighing the risks, we continue to be focused on the opportunities to purchase and to own high-quality businesses that are well-positioned to grow in the medium and the long term. Thank you for joining us and for the faith and the trust that you place in us every day. If you have questions you want to take offline with us, please do not hesitate to contact us. We would be pleased to hear from you. Nisi, I'd like to turn the call back to you.
And that concludes our conference. Thank you for using AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.